Welcome to the Ferris Love Podcast. Here we explore spiritual insights and practical strategies to help you cultivate a family life rooted in beautiful, self-giving love. Join us as we invite experts to share uplifting perspectives and actionable advice for navigating the joys and challenges of modern family dynamics. Welcome back to the Ferris Love Podcast. Today we're joined by Katie Hinder, founder of Rosebud Social Strategies and seasoned digital strategist with a background in journalism and communications. Today, we're going to discuss the promises and pitfalls of AI and how it's shaping our homes and what families can do to manage technology while also protecting their time and relationships. Katie, thank you so much for joining us again on the Ferris Love Podcast.
My pleasure. Always fun to talk about the things that I love the most. So.
Yes. And last time we had this on the show, we spoke about social media and how our parents can help their children in navigating that landscape. Mm-hmm. And today, it's actually kind of funny. The last time we spoke, I think AI was kind of just coming around. You know, it wasn't really something that very involved in, I guess, the commonplace. But can you give us just kind of a little bit of an overview of artificial intelligence and what we're seeing now today? In that landscape.
Yeah. So it's fascinating because I'm not going to give you like an official definition. You can look that up, but it's kind of fascinating because I mean, AI and like the algorithms have been part of our online experience for a pretty long time, but we just haven't recognized that. Right. So you think of your Spotify feed, they're like, you know, made for you playlist that they have, or now the various playlists they make for you. That's technically AI. That's kind of an algorithmic thing where the computer is kind of doing the work to learn more about you and figure you out. Or think of Netflix when they suggest the next thing you might want to watch, it's based on AI. So, but now we're seeing all of that kind of technology and that kind of idea moving into the space of everything, image creation, composition of letters or text or papers or anything like that, anything you could think of, and more. I mean, really, you imagine it, you can probably find something that AI can create it, creating music, creating art, creating whatever. And it's basically just really intense computer technology, right? Computer, and I'm not techie in that sense, but basically that can read and interpret and then spit out things based on the promptings that you give it. And then it's, you know, search of the internet and it's knowledge. And I put that in like quotation marks, it's knowledge of the industry or this area.
Yeah. And I think what would come to mind for someone is ChatGPT, like just kind of discussing like that in that sense.
Absolutely.
What do you see are some benefits that come from this use? I mean, you mentioned Spotify, we love our music and Netflix recommendations, but are there any other benefits that maybe someone who does never even considered using it could be like, oh, actually that might be something to consider using?
Absolutely. I think there's a lot of uses and a lot of really good uses that AI can be used for. ChatGPT, Google Gemini, you know, all of those kinds of things. And then there's so many others. Let me give you a couple examples of interesting kind of fun ways I've used it in my own life that's really helped me. So I was recently in Rome and I would often use it. I would type in and say something like, I'm walking into, you know, the Basilica of St. John Lateran. Can you give me 10 interesting fun facts about the things I'm going to see inside or things that I should look out for? And then it would spit out and it would give me interesting fun facts about, you know, sculptures that were in there or the way that it was built or who built it or who's buried there. And it, for me, that really just increased my experience. It just made it such a much more in-depth experience instead of just like walking into this church, being overwhelmed by all the things you see and then being like, I don't really know what this is, but like whatever. So that was really interesting. Related to that, I went to the church that has the Ecstasy of St. Teresa, which is a really famous sculpture by Bernini. I had never seen it before. And so when I walked into the church, I had asked ChatGPT to give me some fun facts about this sculpture and things like that. And I have, one of the things about AI is you train it to give you kind of what you want, to know kind of what you're expecting and things like that. So it spit out all this beautiful information about Bernini and sculpting this and all that. And then it ended with a question: would you like me to create for you a guide for your afternoon prayer?
Oh, wow.
And I was like, yes, please. And it put together a beautiful list of questions for contemplation and like dialogue with our Lord about the sculpture that I was looking at. And I was really like blown away by it. And I had a great time of prayer doing that and using ChatGPT. So I think, you know, you can certainly use it for that. You could also use it for more basic things. I know people who, and there are, you can use ChatGPT, but there are like different platforms, apps you can use where you put in the contents of your refrigerator and it will give you a recipe, you know, using the things that you have. Or you put in and you have it make an exercise plan for you, right? Or whatever. So there are a lot of really good, really helpful uses for ChatGPT, for sure, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I've used the recipe one before.
Yeah, that's great.
Because it's in a pinch, it works out. That's great. And we had talked about in the last conversation just about social media and like you've spoken about the algorithm and everything and and even just talking about how ChatGPT learns or whatever platform you're using learns from how you input it, how it outputs. Mm-hmm. Do you think that there are any, let's say, risks or kind of just things to be wary of in the midst of using this?
Sure.
From a personal, like an adult standpoint, where we don't have to get into kids just yet, but kind of from that.
Yeah. I mean, I think there can certainly be downfalls, especially if we're thinking specifically for adults. I think it can, take away creativity. I think it can take away kind of the use of our brains. If we're like, oh, I'm just going to have ChatGPT write every email and write every blog post and write every means of communication or whatever, like then we're not, you know, nuanced in that way. And we're not using our brains in that way. I think the other kind of downfall that can happen, especially for adults, is that they take ChatGPT as, or any AI software, as having all the facts. Mm-hmm. And obviously it's going to have some bias based on what it's looking at, where it's going, all of, you know, like what you've already fed it. And so, you know, like the example I was giving you of, do you want, you know, help with your afternoon prayer? It's biased to me in that way because it knows a little bit more about my life and the things that I'm usually asking it for. So you're crafting your algorithm and you could be crafting it for good or for evil, right? Mm-hmm. And I think it's going to give you answers, but it's going to also give you answers based on a little bit what you're looking for. And so you can kind of be in a little bit of an echo chamber in that sense. The same way we can be with social media when we follow certain accounts and then that algorithm puts us in an echo chamber, the same can happen with AI, right? So definitely something to be aware of.
Yeah. And that's an interesting point. Mm-hmm. I'm curious too, like when, so obviously I think parents, like I've mentioned it to my, I've brought it up. We do ChatGPT Tuesday with my sisters and I'll send a prompt. But how do you think, kids are using it these days? You know, I've heard a lot about, you know, articles of kids using it for their college essays or, you know, things like that. How do you think that's affecting, let's say, children and how they use it?
Yeah. So I think we'll see more and more kids are using it to write school papers, to write essays, to write things like that, to write their, you know, college letters or their college, you know, essay that they have to write. And those kinds of things. And I have to say, I think there's a place for ChatGPT even in those situations, but I think it's trying to find a balance, right? Mm-hmm. So let me give you an example that's a little bit more for adults, but kind of can apply to kids as well, just because I've recently experienced it. So I was recently hiring and I received like over 50, you know, resume applications, cover letters, et cetera. And for some of them, it was very clear that they had ChatGPT write their cover letter. And it was very clear because it was very generic. It didn't seem to have much personality or much personalization. And it also had the very long M dash, which is a really popular thing. If you follow ChatGPT kind of things, it puts a long M dash in. And so you can kind of tell from that way. Now, Am I opposed to people having used ChatGPT to help them write their cover letter? No. However, there are ways that you can do that and ways that you probably shouldn't do it. So just going into ChatGPT and being like, write a cover letter for me because I'm applying for a job, that's, you didn't put any work into that other than typing out about 20 words.
Yeah.
On the other hand, if you had gone and said to ChatGPT, I'm applying for this job, here's why I think I'm a good candidate, here's the, you know, job description, et cetera, here's my resume, can you help me craft a compelling cover letter that highlights my expertise in, you know, area X, area Y, area Z, and, you know, formulate that in a way that's going to really appeal to, you know, the boss who's hiring. And then you send that through ChatGPT. To me, that's a much more effective, but also much more personalized way of doing it. And it wouldn't be as obvious. So I think students, kids can use it in the same way. You could certainly use it to help you write a better paper or essay. You put your essay in, you're like, help me improve this a little bit. And it could help you with that. Or check it for grammar, spelling. I know somebody who's like a horrible speller and puts all their emails into ChatGPT just to fix their spelling and their grammar problems. I think that's a great use for it. And the other thing that I think can be a really good use for students or for adults is using it as a way to ideate. So if you're not really great at coming up with lots of ideas, coming up with new, you know, ways of looking at things, it can be really a great tool to put in. Like, let's say you, I don't know, your child's in history class and they have to write a paper about World War II. And he has no idea what he wants to write about. Putting that into ChatGPT and saying, I have to write a paper about World War II. I don't know what I want to write about. Can you ask me some questions to help me find a topic? And ChatGPT will spit back questions. They'll answer them. And then it can, you know, come up with 20 possible topics for you to write about. So that could be a really interesting tool and a really great way for kids to use it as well.
Yeah. And it's it sounds like it's you're putting in the effort to begin with. It's not even, it's not just like, do this for me. It's you have to be specific and be very clear. In our past conversation, we talked about like age, you know, when kids should have social media. Do you think that there's something, do you think that there should be kind of like this age, maybe not limit, but maybe when you should start introducing that or?
Yeah, it's so tricky because like everything is AI now. I mean, ChatGPT is the one that we know the most, Gemini, but there's so many other platforms beyond just like writing platforms. You use Canva and Canva now has AI options, you know, all of these things. So I don't know if there's, if there needs to be an age because it's in so many parts of their life. So unlike social media where you can choose to have that and we see the negative impacts it can have on self-esteem and all of that kind of stuff, AI isn't like that in the same way because it's used in so many different settings. So I don't know if there's necessarily an age, but I think there are conversations parents need to start having with kids, especially as they're getting into the stages of needing to authentically say whether they created something or not. And that's conversations they need to have, right? Like writing essays for history class, like, did you write that essay or did ChatGPT write that essay, right? Like having those kinds of questions about authenticity and presenting work and what it means to, it's not plagiarism, but it's also not your own work. And so it's this weird, we don't really have a name for it necessarily yet because it's not copying and it's not stealing someone else's work, but it's also not presenting work as your own. Well, it is presenting work as your own, but you didn't actually do it. So there's, we don't have a word for it yet, but there's nuance
maybe maybe it'll be our next conversation. Do you think AI, I mean, you did mention it earlier, just a little bit about how you think it limits creativity. Can you expand upon that a little bit more? How you think it could?
Yeah. So I think, you know, there's something to be said for taking, you know, pen to paper or, you know, being artistic and drawing or whatever. And I think just relying on ChatGPT to write letters for you or write your essays or papers or come up with all your ideas, things like that, I think can take creativity away and it stops us from kind of using that part of our brain that's very artsy, that's very left brain. I don't know the different sides of the brain, but you know, that kind of a thing. And I think the more we do that, the less then we're able to find creative solutions maybe to life problems or to different things like that. And so I think it can be really detrimental if we're relying very heavily on AI for these kinds of things. So, you know, I can give an example of this that I think is like a way to use it well. I was talking to somebody who was trying to come up with a series that he was going to do on his podcast. And he had come up with 30 ideas, but he wanted one for every day of the week for the whole year. So he wanted 365 ideas. He had come up with already like 30, 35 of them on his own. He was really, really proud of them. But he was hitting a little bit of a roadblock because he was like, I came up with 35, but now I'm like, I don't know. Yes. And I said, oh, that's perfect. Take those 35 and then now put them into ChatGPT and say, I need to come up with 40 more like this. And then ChatGPT came up with 40 more. But I think, and this is where I think the nuance comes in, he came up with the original 35. This is his idea. It made it very clear to the algorithm where he wants to go, the kinds of things he wants to be talking about. And then it did the thinking, in quotation marks, to come up with an additional set, as opposed to him going to ChatGPT right away and saying, I'm starting the series, give me 40 ideas. And so I think we want to make sure that we're still using our creativity in that, and then maybe using it as a helpful assistant, as opposed to the creative mind behind it.
That's great. Yeah, like as a little assistant. Do you think that there are... ethical concerns? I mean, are they with social media, or with AI?
So I think, you know, some of what we've been talking about already, just the authenticity of what, especially for students, of what they're putting out there, of what they're doing, of what they're claiming to be writing, but are they really writing it? It's not plagiarism, but it's also not their own work. And how do you do that? I think that's an ethical issue. People claiming they did something that they haven't done. I also think, and this is kind of a new area, and I'm fascinated to see how this kind of develops, but there's a new kind of brand, I would say, of influencers on social media that are all AI generated people. And so, but people don't know that. So you like AI has enhanced and like gotten so much better over the last year that you actually would get onto these accounts and not totally be able to realize that this is a fake person. That's and scary. So I think it's also going to cause some problems, some additional problems, because of course these are like perfect looking people, right? With perfect bodies, perfect lives. And I think for a lot of girls on social media, this is going to create more of an unrealistic standard that they feel they need to live up to, because they don't even realize that this is a completely fictionalized character that looks like a real person. So I think that is going to be a really interesting ethical issue, interesting ethical thing to look at. And then the other area that I'm really fascinated with, and I think we've seen a lot actually since Pope Leo has been elected, is fake videos coming out claiming they are audio or video from previous homilies Pope Leo gave, or, you know, there was a video that came out recently of a cardinal who... like apparently told all about what happened behind the doors of the conclave. And he's like, this is fake. I didn't do this. Like I didn't give this interview, but it looks like him. And because it can read your voice and it can create things in the voice and in the intonation and in the way things are going, I think it's going to be like this idea of fake news is going to be a lot harder to spot and a lot more prevalent. And so we're going to have to do even more research to verify the things that we're hearing and the things that we're seeing to see if they really are, you know, valid. There's been all these fake deep cuts of the Pope's previous homilies that have been surfacing that are all AI generated. So I think that's a big ethical issue that we're going to see a lot of.
Wow. And I love that you mentioned Pope Leo, because he did have in one of his first talks about just, yes, this technological age that we're in. And then he also talked about like critical thinking and just being able to discern, you know, those kinds of things. So I think that's exactly what you're saying.
I think, you know, as we're talking too, I think another ethical issue that like parents should kind of be aware of is also this idea that because conversations on things like Gemini or ChatGPT, or I mean, even Snapchat now has an AI chat conversation that you can be in. I think some kids, especially kids who are lonely or awkward, socially awkward, etc., are going to feel like they have relationships that they don't actually have, because they will be in conversations or relationships with AI created entities, beings, conversations, etc. And I think that is going to be a really tricky thing for parents to navigate as well, helping them understand that while this chat bot can sound really real, can come across mm-hmm. as very understanding, as very empathetic, as very affectionate, that's all algorithms that you've trained to be that way and not a real person. And so I do think that's also another interesting ethical dilemma that people are going to need to be aware of, because like I joke and like call my chat like by name and whatnot, but like I'm joking about it, but
yeah,
you feel like you're talking to a real person sometimes and you're not, but it feels like it. And I think for kids especially, that's going to be really hard to differentiate at times, because a lot of their communication with their actual living being friends happens online already. And so I think they're going to have a hard time differentiating between the two at times.
I'd love to kind of go deeper into that. I know, you know, in the past you have given us some examples of, you know, going to high schools and talking, giving talks to high school girls and things about their use of social media and all that. With that in mind, so keeping that in mind, the AI bot thing and all that, how can parents really help encourage their children to remain present with the relationships that they have, even now through this new, like social media was one thing that parents had to handle. Now this is new and have to handle this very different.
You know, it's funny. I've been thinking a lot about this. Cause I was recently talking to some girls in college, like 19, 20 year olds, and they're already on dating apps because that's the only way to meet people. And it's the only way to like get to know someone. And I was like, wait, but like you're in college. Like you're surrounded by guys and girls and like people to talk to. And they're like, oh no, no. Like I'm like in my dorm, like swiping left and right. And like, maybe if it works, I'm going to connect and like whatever. Anyway, that had me thinking a lot. Like, I think parents today need to encourage their kids from an early age to spend quality time phoneless with friends. So like you need to be like, hey, like let's meet Jimmy at the park, like you guys are gonna spend the afternoon there. Or like, hey, we're all going to the pool and like we're spending a pool day together, no phone, no one's bringing phones. Or we're gonna go for a hike, no one's bringing phones. Or you're hanging out at the house but you're phone free. I think we need to teach people, especially young people, to spend more physical quality time with one another so that they learn how to have in-person conversations and they learn the nuances and the differences of that than online communication. So that I think is actually the biggest, that would be my suggestion, is the biggest thing to do, quality time together without phones in the family, even too. No phones at the dinner table, but also like maybe no phone Sundays for everyone, parents included, right? Where you're just spending time together without phones, without interruptions, I think is a really big important thing.
That's great. Lots of things to think about. I am curious your thoughts on, so for this month, we're talking about like protecting your time, which AI can do. It can help you, I think, in doing that. But also just, in preparation for school and all those, you know, how can parents use AI to maybe help them in preparation for school? If you have any ideas there.
I have so many ideas for this. So one of the ways that I actually really love using AI is having it help me come up with a schedule for my day. And so I will at times, like I'll punch in and I'll say, hey, I need to put together a schedule for my day. Here's what I need it to include. And I need 9 hours solidly in bed, because then that means I'll probably sleep 8 hours. I'm going to go to mass at this time. I need time to do X. I need time to do Y. I need time to do Z. And then here's all the other things that I need to fit into my day. Can you put together a schedule to do that? That I think can be really helpful for families to do. Can you put together a schedule for our family? Like, here's all the commitments that we have. Like, when can we find time to be together? When can we find time to have family time? Or whatever, and have AI figure that out for you. I think that can be a really great lesson, a really great tool. Also using it as a conversation starter for meals. You could say, hey, like we want to start doing family meals together and having like one kind of fun, interesting conversation every day. Can you give me 30 prompts for the month of September to bring to family dinner every night? And it comes up with 30 prompts. You can tell it how old your kids are. So it comes up with like age appropriate prompts and you do that kind of a thing, right? So I think there are lots of ways that you can use it in that sense that I think could help build the family together, that can help ease your schedule or ease kind of some of, you know, those things. You can have it put together a list of school supplies or find your school's list of supplies if it created it for you, right? All those kinds of things can be really helpful.
That's awesome. And then just to kind of finish up, if you could give families kind of one small important piece of advice on how to manage their time, but then also how to manage these technologies in a responsible way, as the school year kind of ramps up and you know, maybe kids have their iPads at school and things like that. What, do you have any advice for parents on just being able to manage all of that?
Yeah, I think, you know, the nice thing about the new school year is it feels a little bit like a new year, like the New Year's, right? A New Year's, new year, new me, or, you know, like you can come up with all these new resolutions on January 1st. But there's something unique too about the start of a new school year that like everyone feels like they're beginning again. Even the parents who are not in school, you're like, I feel like I'm starting again. Like I have this chance to like reset. So I think it's really good and it can be really important to come up with like, what are the new family ground rules? What are the new family like ways of being? And maybe that means our new family ground rules are, you know, no phones in the house from dinner until whatever, right? Now we're spending time together. And then no phones in the bedroom. And then, you know, I was talking to someone the other day and they said, we started shutting our internet off at 10:30 at night. So the house has no internet anymore after 10:30 at night. And they said, and it was great. My kids started getting sleep again. And I didn't even know they were, I didn't even know they were staying up, but they were like suddenly so tired. And they're like, we just started shutting our internet off and then they just couldn't be on their laptops anymore. And then you can make a special exception if there's like, you know, that late paper that they didn't write and they've got to put it together, you know, and they're pulling in an all nighter. But, I think that, so I would sit down, maybe sit down with your spouse and come up with, okay, like what are our family ground rules for technology, for social media, for all of these kinds of things, and really put them together and then communicate those to the kids in a like very positive, affirming way, not like, here's your new rules to live by. And do that. And then like really stick to your guns on it. Cause I think, you know, the first couple of weeks it'll be like fine. And then the kids will come home and they're tired and you're tired. And they're like, no, I don't want to give you my phone. Like, can I just have it at dinner? Or can we just have the TV on at dinner? And you're like, no, we're spending time together. Like this is our family goal. This is our family plan. This is what we're doing. That's what I would say in terms of, you know, the timing and the technology. And then I think, you know, in terms of boundaries for, you know, for all the social media and things like that, I think really important, like just time limits and just looking at your own usage, you know, and our phones track all of this. So looking at our own usage and looking at our kids' usage and really digging deep into like, do I want to be a person who's on my phone this much? Do I want to be someone who's on Instagram 5 hours a day? If the answer is yes, okay, fine. But I would guess for most people, the answer is not yet. Yes. Right. And so then to be like, okay, but that is the person I am right now. Because if that's the reality of my numbers and my stats, that's who I am. So really kind of asking ourselves that, helping our kids kind of think through that and then making decisions based on that is really good.
Extremely helpful. Thank you.
Yeah.
And thank you so much, Katie, for being on our podcast and sharing all this great information, some cool information and all that. So we're very happy that you were able to be with us. So thank you.
Happy to. Anytime.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Ferris Love Podcast. In 2025, we are continuing to share the beautiful devotion to Mary, Mother of Ferris Love, while providing practical tools and advice for parents, couples, and families. You can help us with this mission by sharing this episode with a friend, subscribing to the podcast, or leaving a review. To learn more, visit us at ferrislovefamilyproject.org.